Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Nun Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah at the very top of Daf Nun Hey. Before we go to the Mishnah, we glance at the side of our Gemara, where we've written in the Nosei, the topic heading, and very simply, Mashmos Hamilim, we're going to be occupied with trying to figure out the meaning of the words Dogon and Tevuah. Needless to say, as we have repeated oft times in our Gemara markings, Nedarim Daf Yomi Shurim, that the topic of Nedarim deals with words, how people speak, what are people's intents. Mere translation is not sufficient, and oftentimes by translating, you're committing yourself to a narrow explanation of the word in question. And therefore, as we have been practicing along the way, we avoid translating many words. I know that it poses a bit of frustration to those who are eager in understanding what is really being said, but for those who are interested in translations and committing themselves to translations, there are fine works available on the market, but personally I don't want to commit myself to translating things that concerning which we don't have a very strong tradition on what they mean. And in today's shiur we're going to be dealing with words that are actually quite common, Dogon and Tevuah. What do they refer to? We can say in very general terms, you'll find Dogon and Tevuah used in the context of grains, wheat, barley, oats, spelt, rye. These are examples of things that you would expect to find under the category of these words, Dogon and Tevuah. However, how do you categorize other items, different kinds of beans and legumes and what have you? So, we continue now with the Mishnah. Hanoider min hadogon, one who swears or vows not to consume dogon, oser beful hamitzri yovesh, divrei Rebbe Meir. He is prohibiting upon himself this kind of vegetation as well, the pul hamitzri yovesh. The Rosh says, we'll read the Rosh together. The dogon, the word dogon, kol mini de midgan mashmashos mimenu kri. It's all kinds of vegetation that when you harvest them, you would also make a kri, a pile out of them. I think it's safe to assume that when one harvests, let's say, the likes of tomatoes, he doesn't pile them up in a large pile. So, you can rest assured then that dogon would not include something like tomatoes. However, pul hamitzri yovesh, which may be some type of dry bean, it's something that is midgan, something that you would make into a pile. And therefore, one who vows not to partake of dogon, he is prohibiting upon himself all kinds of kitnios. Kitnios is a term translated often as referring to legumes that one, upon harvesting, will make a pile out of it. That is Rebbe Meir's approach. We continue in the Mishnah. V'chachomim oimrim eino osur elo b'chameshes aminim. By vowing not to partake of dogon, you are prohibiting only the five specific types of grain that we made reference to before, the barley, the wheat, rye, spelt, and oats. Rebbe Meir, Omer, hanoder min ha'tevuah, eino osur elo mechameshes haminim. Avol hanoder min hadogan osur bakoil umuter beperis ilin ubiyerek. So Rebbe Meir says that the idea of the Chamesh Saminim, which is something we saw in the name of the Chachomim when the use of Dogon was made, Rebbe Meir says, if you say a vow not to partake of Tevua, that is restricted to the five types of grain. However, if one is noder min hadogon, that is far more inclusive. As the Mishnah says, osur bakol. What is not included in dogon are fruit from trees and vegetables. We cited the tomato example before. The Gemara. Lameimra, what the Mishnah suggests is the dogon kol demidgan mashma, anything, any type of vegetation that upon harvesting you would make it into a pile. The Rashi lameimra the dogon dechtiv bikra kol min demidgan mashma, anything that you would pile up. Now the result of that is v'chayev b'meiser min haTorah. That would mean that on a Torah level of law, you would be obligated in separating the tithes that the Torah requires from all of these different kinds of vegetation. Anything that you would make a pile out of. V'afilu mishar minim. Even from things other than the specific grains that we mentioned. From the fact that you see this in the Mishnah, that one who swears not to partake of Dogon, you are forbidding yourself in many, many different things. The Pasuk, when speaking about tithes, says that one shall tithe mi Dogon, Tirosh, and Yitzhar. Tirosh is a reference to wine, Yitzhar is a reference to olive oil, but it also says Dogon. So, from Dogon, as far as the Torah, Doraisa means laws you find in the five books of Moses. Those are Doraisa laws. And by saying that Dogon is inclusive of much more than just the specific grains we mentioned, then you're saying that all of those other items, all those legumes and beans that might be piled up, are chayiv, are obligated at being tithed on a Torah level. This leads us into the next question. Mosiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef challenges what we said based on a pasuk in Divrei HaYomim. It says, "Uchfrotz hadavar hirbu bnei Yisrael reishis dogon tirosh v'yitzar v'chol tvuas sode u'masar kol loroiv v'chulei." Rashi, "Uchfrotz hadavar klomar kiblu aleim takanto shel Chizkiyo." The posuk in Divrei Yomim is a posuk referring to a time, late in the first temple period. That the Klal Yisrael accepted upon themselves the ruling of King Chizkiah. La'aser hakol, to take tithes from all kinds of growths, agricultural produce. Kidichtiv hirbu b'nei Yisrael, the posuk indicates hirbu from the word rove, increase. So that, according to this, there is an original, we'll say, pure Torah level expectation of tithing, and then a subsequent expanded idea of tithing. So we have to define then what's the original concept of tithing. The Rashi continues, "E amres bishlama dogon, the dogon lo mashmelo mechameshes minim." If you say that dogon, in fact, is quite limited to the five varieties of grain, "Haynu d'osakro lemeimor," the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim that we cited, "Uchrot sadover," that pasuk comes to say, "Hirbu ben Yisrael da'afilu dover shalom nischayev v'maisim min haTorah." Even things that are not obligated to be tithed from a purely Torah perspective, kagon sha'ar mini demidgini, like other things other than the grains, the beans and legumes that are piled up. Then, as we said, the pasuk would make sense that there was the increased practice of the Jews reflects an increase from what the Torah's narrow definition was to an increased definition in the time of Chizkiah. And well, Yamar's Dagon, Komid Midgen Mashma, if you'll say that the word Dagon is all inclusive of everything that's piled up, Mayuch Frotza Dover Hirbu, what is meant then by the Pasuk in the Divrei HaYomim that says that there was increase? Klomar Maho Sifu Amashikos of the Torah, what were they doing any more than that which the Torah already obligates them? We read the Rashi, now we go back to the Gemara, which says everything we just said, but in a terse form. The Gemara, V'i Amris, Dagon called the Midgan Mashma. If you're going to say that the word Dagon is all-inclusive, anything that you harvest and pile up, my Kefroitza Dover Hirbu, what was their subsequent increase in practice when the original Torah concept is quite inclusive? Omar Abaye. Abaye says you can maintain the suggestion of the Mishnah that Dagon is in fact quite inclusive. The question then was regarding the Pasuk in Divrei HaYomim, what did they come to add? I'll tell you, the answer is Lasi Peros Ilan V'Yerek. What they added, which even the word Dagon does not include, are fruits and vegetables. So the later increased practice was, whereas the Torah says that Dagon is chayev in tithing, and as we said, that might be quite inclusive, but as far as the Torah is concerned, fruits and vegetables did not need tithing. Later, in the time of Chizkiah, a takana was established, a ruling was established that even fruits and vegetables are to be tithed. Rabbi Meir Omer Hanoidim Min HaTavua V'chulei Omer Rabbi Yochanan HaKol Moidim Benodim Min HaTavua Shein Osir Ela Machameshes Haminim. Rabbi Yochanan says that all agree that if a person in his vow said he's not going to partake of Tavua, he is prohibiting himself only from the five types of grain that we listed before. Tanya Nami Hochi, a brisa supports Rabbi Yochanan, v'shavin v'nodim in ha-tavua. There is agreement when it comes to someone vowing not to partake of tavua, shein osur elo mechameshes haminim. The Gemara says, Pshita, is this not obvious? Doesn't everyone understand that the word tavua is a reference to the five types of grain? The Gemara says, no, mahu detemo tavua ko mili mashma. One might have thought that the word tavua has an inclusive connotation. Komash molom de lo mashma kol mili. So our Tanaic source and Rabbi Yochanan are telling us, don't think thusly. Mosiv Rav Yosef. Interestingly, as we saw before, Rav Yosef challenges. Here too, he challenges from the pasuk, the same pasuk we had before. Uchfroi tzadavo hirbu b'nei Yisrael. V'chol tvuas sodeh larov. Now, what exactly is the question? So we take a look at the Rashi, where we have a star across from here in the Rashi. Tvuas sodeh larov, alma de tvua mashma kol mili. The expression tvua seems to be including quite a bit more than the five grains. Da dechtiv tvuas sodeh lav mechameshes minim komar. The pasuk is clearly not referring to the specifically or the limited five grains, the ikru tvua, and the word tvua appears in the context of something that's beyond the five grains. We might elaborate a bit. The pasuk describes additional tithing that wasn't required before, that wasn't required by the Torah. With regard to the five grains, that was required to be tithed from the Torah. So this pasuk, Ufrotz Adover, the pasuk from Divrei HaYomim, using the word tvua, is not referring to the five grains, which was obligated anyway in being tithed. The Gemara answers, Omar Rava, tvua l'chud, tvuas sodeh l'chud. There are two different expressions. There's the basic word tvua, that is, as Rabbi Yochanan said, only the five grains. When you see a compound expression, tvua sodeh, that includes much more. We continue with a glance at the side, the nosei, the topic heading, mashmos hamilo erlalta. We're going to see a word, an Aramaic word, erlalta, and try to understand what it means. The Gemara, bar mor Shmuel, pokid, son of Shmuel, announced in establishing his will, his, we'll say, his desires of property distribution upon his death. The lesnun tleser alfi zuzi lerova min arlalta denahar panya. If we try to, outside of the word alalta, we'll just try to translate the rest of the expression. Bar Mar Shmuel wants to give to Rava Tlesar. Lesnun means to give. Tlesar is 13. Tlesar alfi, 13,000 zuzi. Zuzi is a coin, a denomination of currency. So he wants to give Rava 13,000 zuzi of from Alalta. Alalta dinar pan. Dinar pan is the name of a place. So the only truly obscure expression here is Alalta. Sholcha Rava lekameda Rav Yosef. Alalta hechi mikri. Rava sent to his Rebbe, Rav Yosef. He said, what is included in Alalta? In other words, I've got 13,000 dinar worth of Alalta coming to me. What is it? Omer of Yosef Masnisinhi. The Mishnah will answer your question. Vishovin Benodir Minatvua Shein Osu Elo Mechameshes Haminim. We glance at the Ran commentary. Eino osur elo b'chameshes haminim. V'avisviru leila Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is of the opinion that kevon da'alalta targum tevuahu. The Ran doesn't mention this, but it is noteworthy that Rav Yosef throughout the Shas was an expert in targum. Targum is the traditional Aramaic, I would say translation, but it's more accurate to say explanation of the Torah. In the Torah, the word tevua appears. And Rav Yosef holds that the word alalta is the Aramaic equivalent of the Hebrew word tevua. And what's tevua? Chameshes haminim bilichud mashma. Since alalta is the Aramaic version of tevua, and tevua is limited to the five types of grain, so Rava is entitled to collect 13,000 dinar worth of grain, of the five specific varieties of grain: wheat, barley, spelt, oats, and rye. Omar le Abaye. Abaye asks Rav Yosef, mi domi, how do you compare tevua lo mashma elo mechameshes haminim? The word tevua implies, is used in reference to true, only the five grains. Alalta kol mili mashma. The Ran explains alalta kol mili mashma. The alalta loshen alalta is itself a word that refers to bia, v'achnosa, v'shevach. In Aramaic, you find the word erl. Erl is to enter. So enter of, it has to do with entrance, bringing things in, also shevach, things that improve, things that increase in value. The Rashi says also, alalta mashma kol mili she'oilel m'shevach, anything that rises and improves, v'afilu mishar perish m'shevachin, and that would include even things beyond the five types of grain, tzivah, ligvois, mehem, all kinds of growth They start off in seed form, and they grow, and they develop, they enlarge, and eventually are sold for amounts of money much more than the original seed was worth. So Mar Shmuel was giving to Rava 13,000 worth, 13,000 dinar worth of alalta. That's not an instruction to gather or to collect only from the five varieties of grain. Ahadruhu lekamei derava. So what Abaye said was then reported to Rava. Omar. Here we have Rava. He opens with a statement that lasts a couple of lines. You can see we've marked it thusly. Rava says, "Ha lo komi bayali da'alta komi li mashma." It was never a question to me that alalta includes many different things. There's a comment in the Tosfos on the third of the wide lines of the Tosfos. Halo mi bayali de chol perus ikri alalta. All fruits are called by are referred to by the term alalta. Called over. Kol devar oichlin mikri alalta. V'chein shar nechosim de alalta. Midi dehu bi'ein mashma. The word alalta means anything that is extant. Ki kom boyale, what Rava was not clear on, was schar botim, schar sfinos, mi'aminon. Schar is income derived from renting houses, renting boats. Mi'aminon kima de botim sfinos. Do we say that, well, boats and houses are things that as day after day, as time goes on, they depreciate. There is natural depreciation in these items. So therefore, laf b'chal alalta, rent income, the schar botim schar sfinos, rent income would not fall under the category of alalta. Alalta mashma midi de mishabeach, v'lo midi de poches. Alalta implies something that increases, not something that decreases, that goes through depreciation. So this is part of what Rava was not sure about, as the Gemara will explain, but quite briefly. So what, to review the point that we started, Rava says that it's to me it's obvious, says Rava, along the lines of Abaye, that alalta is quite inclusive of much more than the five types of grain, which, by the way, is certainly is a refutation or a repudiation of what Rav Yosef had said. So Rava says, to me it's very clear that alalta is quite inclusive. Hoda hu de ba'ili, but it's the following that I'm not sure of, that I'm in doubt of, and I have to know with regard to what exactly am I entitled to as per Mar Shmuel's will. Schar botim uschar sfinos mai. What about collecting the 13,000 dinar from rent, the rent income of Mar Shmuel's houses and boats? Mi amrinon, and now we have two sides of the analysis. Mi amrinon kivon de pachson lavalata. Do we say that since houses and boats experience depreciation, they're not included in alalta? Oy dilmo kivon de lo yodia pachsayu. Or maybe since the daily depreciation is not something that is quite obvious, it's a very slow type of depreciation. Alalta hi, it's considered nevertheless in the realm of alalta, since they do produce income. The Gemara continues. Amrua Rabbonon Kameder of Yosef. That which Rava said that alalta is this portion, it's clear that it's very inclusive, this was told to Rav Yosef. Omar, Rav Yosef said, "V'chimeacha delot sorech lana my shalach lan." He was slighted. He was insulted, if you will. And Rav Yosef says, "Since you don't need me, you asked me originally what's alalta, And now it's quite clear you knew all along in your mind what Al-Alta is. So since you don't need me, why did you bother sending the question to me? Ikbid Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef was upset. He was slighted. Shoma Rava. Rava heard that Rav Yosef had been made upset. The also the Kamei Baal the Yom Kippur, and he approaches Rav Yosef on Erev Yom Kippur. Now, Erev Yom Kippur, of course, is the time that people try to make amends. They want to atone for their sins. And as is very well known, Yom Kippur, though it's known as a day of prayer and supplication, nevertheless, all of the pleas cast heavenwards will bear no fruit when the affront for which one is pleading was committed to a fellow man. Unless the fellow man who was slighted is approached for forgiveness. And that's exactly what Rava's intention was. He approached Rav Yosef Erev Yom Kippur to straighten their relationship, to straighten matters out. And it's important, for the purpose of appreciating the story, to realize that Rav Yosef himself was a non-sighted individual. He was a blind person. We continue in the Gemara. Ashkechei l'shamei dahave komozi kamei kosa dechamra. Rava, upon it, approaching Rav Yosef's residence, found his servant preparing a cup of wine for Rav Yosef. Wine preparation is, as far as in the time of the Gemara, before people had available bottled wine, people made their own wine. And in the time of the Gemara, after you prepare the basic wine from the fermented grapes, the resultant wine was too strong to be drunk straight. So water was added. There was something we call dilution. And that's what we refer to as mozig or meziga, adding water to the wine concentrate. What was the ratio wine water? So there was the popular approach. We'll use an example that is actually seen elsewhere in the Shas, and we'll just use it for illustrative purposes for this story. Common dilution was two parts water for every one part wine. Rava diluted wine more than that. He added three parts water for one part wine. That was Rava's practice. So, the story now continues. Rava meets the shamash about to prepare a cup of wine and involving the dilution of it for Rav Yosef. Omarle, Rava says to the servant, Hav li the amzig le ano. Let me prepare the wine. Yohav le, so he did, he gave to him the komozik iu kosa dechama, and Rava prepared the cup of wine. Ki koshosi, Omar, when Rav Yosef drank the wine, again, Rav Yosef was not cited. When he drank the wine, he said, Hodein mizga domi, Lamizga de Rava Breda Rav Yosef Barchama. This reminds me of the way Rava prepared wine. And as we explained, Rava's practice was to dilute the wine more than, we'll say, was ordinarily done. So Rav Yosef tasted the difference and says, this reminds me of the way Rava used to prepare wine. Omar le, who knew? So he said, yeah, this is Rava. Omar le, so Rav Yosef said to Rava, lo tesef akarach, I don't want you to sit down, ad amrisli pirusha dehadein milsa, until you explain to me the following. The Rashi, you see, second line from the bottom, lo tesef akarach v'chulei, we'll be able to appreciate this Rashi as the Gemara unfolds, but nevertheless, as by way of introduction, Lefisha Hegis Libo, Rashi says, because Rava had demonstrated an air of haughtiness, Sho'al Loi Mikro Zeh Kedei Lahashpil Daito, Rav Yosef was quite, intentional, quite planned in presenting this question to Rava. In other words, it's not as if Rav Yosef didn't know the explanation of the pasuk that he is now going to be asking Rava, but rather he had a message that he wanted to convey to Rava without hitting him between the eyes. Rather in a, we'll call it a somewhat hinting fashion that Rava will get the message. So very simply, Rav Yosef had been slighted by what Rav Yosef perceived as an element, an air of haughtiness on the part of Rava. So he wants to, we'll say, reduce Rava from this expanded air about him. The Gemara continues. My dichtiv, what is the meaning of the following pasuk? We should point out the following pasuk has a very simple translation level, and that is it describes the different way stations of the Jews during their sojourn in the wilderness upon their exodus from Egypt. So the list of places, but Rav Yosef, and you see this in other places in the Shas, that the names of places have significance. And in this case, not only the names, but the sequence of the names has significance, has a message behind them. And the, as the Gemara reads, the Pasuk says, Umi midbor matano, umi matano nachliel, umi nachliel bomos. They, again, on a translation level, they went from a place called Midbor to Matano, and then from Matano, they went to a place, their next way station was Nachliel, and from Nachliel went to Bomos. Omar Le. So Rava explains. And here we have a new marking, a volcano or trapezoid shape. On the side, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, the topic heading combined with a structural note. These trapezoids represent Shlavim, Bedroshim, and Nosei Midas HaNava. These are stages in Rava's analysis, Rava's lecture, that Rava's response with regard to the character trait of humility. Armar Le, so Rava says, Kevon she'oisa adam es atzmo kemidbar, shu mufkar lakol, when a person makes himself like the desert. The desert is a place that is unowned. It's mufkar, it's declared unowned for the benefit of all. It's a place of, we'll say, a place of total insignificance. We're dealing with the desert, and it's available to all. It's not a coveted area. The Rosh, the Tosfos and the Rosh, they explain. If we look in the Rosh at the end of the Rosh, he says the Shemufka Lakol Lumoi Toirosu Lakol, person who is available to teach Torah to anyone who simply desires it. The Lashon of the Tosfos is Shia Malame Torah Lekol, someone willing to teach Torah to everybody. That's this idea of Mufkar Lekol. Just like the desert is a place that anyone can traverse, so too a person who makes himself like that, that is available to teach Torah to everybody. So then Nitna Loi B'Matana, the Torah will be given to him as a gift. Now, we should point out a Gemara Daf Lamed Ches that we learned in this Masechet Nedarim regarding Moshe Rabbeinu. He is described as someone who had learned and forgotten until the Almighty gave him the Torah as a matana. So we can assume that the term given as a gift is a reference to ability to retain Torah knowledge. Don't think this is a small matter regarding Torah study. There's a pasuk that says Hatoif einecha bo veinenu, that if you merely stop thinking about Torah, even momentarily, it flies away. Hatoif has as the root of the word the ayin pei, off, means something that flies away, like the word oif, a reference to a bird. So Torah is something that if you have a good imagination, if you use imagery, the Torah has wings on it. And that even though you study Torah, it's very, very easy to forget Torah. Much easier to forget Torah knowledge than all other intellectual pursuits. So to be granted the retention of the Torah is certainly a major gift. So one who makes himself available to teach Torah to all, the Torah will be given to him as a gift. And that's the juxtaposition of the words Umi Midbar, Matana. If you make yourself like a Midbar, you then get the Torah as a Matana. Shinemar, Umi Midbar, Matana. V'kevon, the Gemara continues four lines from the bottom, V'kevon shenitno lo b'matana, nachalo kel. And once someone retains the Torah, that he receives it as a gift, he is said to be to inherit a portion with the Almighty. That God becomes like his portion. Shenemar, Umi Matana, Nachliel. The word Nachliel is a compound, it's a name representing, or it's a compound word, Nachal, or the word is Nachal, is to inherit, and Kael, the Almighty. The Kevon Shenachalo Kael, or Ledula. Once a person inherits a portion of the Almighty, he rises to greatness. Shenemar, Umi Nachliel. Boma is a place of height. Needless to say, there are people that are known as great Torah personalities, and you'll find almost inevitably these great Torah personalities are people that retain great amounts of Torah knowledge. V'im higvi atzmo HaKadosh Baruch Hu mashpil on, here is really the core of the drusha. If a person, after rising to greatness, then becomes haughty, now there are great people, there are examples of great people that were very humble. The ultimate example is Moshe Rabbeinu. But there are those that don't meet the challenge. They achieve greatness, and then, it, as they say, it goes to their head. And that's what we're referring to here. If they become haughty as a result, the Almighty will see to it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashpila, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will lower them. Shenamar Umi Bamos Hagai, in the travels of the Jewish people, they went from a place called Bamos to Gai, a valley, a deep, a low-lying area. V'loyoid Elo She Shoikfin Oisoi Bakarka. There is another Girsa, the more original text is She Shoikfin Oisoi Bakarka. The idea of shokfin, you can see in the Tosfos at the very end, he says loshon iskupo hanidresis. It's an expression mashkof. In this context, is taken to mean the threshold of a doorway. What's the nature of the threshold of a doorway? It's trampled upon. It's stomped on. So that if a person who achieved greatness and as a result of that becomes haughty, the Kodesh Baruch Hu will cause it that he will fall and be not only fall, but also get stomped on. Shenemar v'nishkefa al pnei hayishima. The word nishkefa, mashkof, is the, in this context, is the door threshold. V'im chozar boy HaKadosh Baruch Hu magbio. Now the dashed volcano shape is done deliberately. It's because up till now we were explaining words from the pasuk in Bamidbar Perek Chof Aleph. Now, as far as the following message is concerned, a pasuk from a totally unrelated context is cited. But the as far as ideas are concerned, there is the connection. So the Gemara says, and if a person, after having, let's say, fallen from heights as a result of haughtiness, he does penitence, he's chozer bo, he changes his ways, HaKadosh Baruch Hu magbil, the Almighty will see to it that he rises again, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifts him up. And the Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis, Shenemar, Kol Gay Yinose. Since we had the word Gai, Ubi Mamos Hagai, used in Bamidbar Chof Aleph, so here you see a point of connection, even though this pasuk is from the book of Isaiah, from Yeshaya, Perek Mem. Nevertheless, that which is Gai, which is lowly, which is down in the valley, Yinose, will be raised up. The Ran makes a comment on the fourth line from the top, Linan Halacha, regarding what practice should be done. Bayan de Rava lo ifshita, the question of Rava of what is included in Alalta was never really answered conclusively. Rava himself expressed the doubt that even though Alalta is quite inclusive, does it include rent income from houses and boats? As someone who was granted in a will 13,000 dinar of Alalta, able to collect from the rent income that is produced from houses and boats. So the Ran says, Hilkoch lo govi mischar batim mischar svinis diad ba'al ashtal ha-tachtoina, aval legabi nidorim naktinan l'chumra, v'kulon b'chlal. So as far as monetary matters are concerned, to go and collect that also questionable source of income, questionable in light of our doubt about what the word Alalta includes, so you're not entitled to collect it. That's on a financial, monetary level. However, if a person, let us say, vowed, I don't want to benefit from Alalta, he won't be entitled. The rent income will be considered Alalta in order to be included in the restrictive vow. The Gemara continues. Tanya. Hanoidim in a dogon, osir af beful hamisri yaveshu muter balach. Person who vowed not to eat or partake of dogon, that will include even the dry pul hamisri. However, it won't include the fresh pul hamisri. That's muter balach. Umuter, the person who had vowed not to consume dogon will be allowed beoyres bechuka betargis ubitisni. Orez is often translated as rice. He's also entitled to eat. He's still able to eat from the. These are chukot targis and tisni are a reference to wheat grains that have been split. Chilka split into two parts. Targis split into three parts. Tisni is grain, wheat grains that have been split into four parts. So even though he swore not to partake of dogon, and dogon certainly will include your basic wheat grain, but once the wheat grain undergoes change, this is a point that Rashi makes, second line from the top, since it undergoes change, it's split into smaller pieces, it no longer is included in the term dogon. Hanodimin peros hashana, osur b'chol peros hashana, a person who vows not to benefit from Peros HaShana, literally the fruit of the year. What does that vow include? It prohibits him from all fruit of the year. Umuter b'gdoyim etloim, ubecholov ubeveitzim b'gozolos. However, Peros HaShana does not include, in terms of this vow, he's not restricted from goats, sheep, milk, eggs, and birds. V'im omar, if, however, he said, Gidule Shana Olai, the growth of the year is upon me a prohibition, Osir B'kulan. So, Gidule Shana will include all of the items we just mentioned the line before. Hanodir min Peros Oretz, someone who vows not to benefit from that, Peros Oretz, Osir B'chol Peros Oretz, and Mutim B'kmeh Pitrius. He is prohibited in all types of fruits and vegetables that grow forth from the land. However, he is allowed to consume kamein and pichios, truffles, and mushrooms. The imamar, if he phrased his vow, gidule karka olai, osir bekulon. And here is no need to translate. We have to leave some room for flexibility as the Gemara continues. But in the meantime, we see an expression, Gidule Karkolai, one who uses that expression, will be prohibiting himself in his vow, not only the fruits and vegetables, but the truffles and mushrooms, fungus growth. Veramini, we raise a contradiction. The source is from a totally unrelated context, but the connection is very strong all the same. The context of this source has to do with the brachos, the benedictions that one makes before partaking of different food items. And it says in this source, which will be contradictory to what we just said, Al Dover She'en Gidulo Min Arzo Meshakol Niebid Varo, on things that are not Gidule Min Arz, one recites the Shehakol Brocha. For example, on a tomato, one will not say Shehakol, he will say Borei Priho Adoma. On cheese, or on a piece of steak, a person will say Shehakol Nieved Voro. So things that are not Gidulo Min Oretz, one says a Shehakol Broch V'Tanyo, Al Hamelach, Vel Azomis, Vel Kmein, Ubitrius, Oimer, Shehakol Nieved Voro. And the Brisa says that on salt and on zomis, on kameim and pitches, on the truffles and mushrooms, one says shakol niyabitvo. So, following the dashed underlining that we have in our Mark Gemaras, we see a term ein gidula min aretz that includes kameim and pitches. The source before spoke about gidule karka, including Kamean and Pitrius. So we've got to make up our mind. Kamean and Pitrius, are they Gidule Karka or not? According to the first source, Kamean and Pitrius are Gidule Karka. According to the second source, they are not Gidule Karka. Omar Abaye. So Abaye explains, and in the back of our minds, we're going to have to think, is it possible that there's a dual standard, some kind of split with regard to vow making versus the standard for formulating benedictions. So Abaye says, Mirba Ravu Me'ara, Me'nak Me'avira Yanki Velo Me'ara. They mirba ravu me'aro, it means they grow forth from the ground, but their nutrients, their sustenance is from the air. As many of you are probably familiar, fungus growths are entities. They don't have roots drawing nutrients from the ground. But rather, it's a function of their growth. It has to do with the spores and the like that travel through the air. The Gemara continues, V'hok katoni, but regarding Kamein and Pitrius, it says, Al dover she'ein gidulo min ha'aretz. How can Abaye say mirva, which is Aramaic, mirva ravu me'ara, which is to grow forth from the ground, when the Tanaic source says that the Kamein and Pitrius are ein gidulo min aretz. They don't grow forth from the ground. Abaye answers, Tani, as far as the Shehakol Brocha is concerned, the source should have read as follows, or it should be understood thusly. Al dover she'ein yonek min aretz. If something doesn't derive its nutrients from the ground, though physically they may develop on the ground, but since their nutrients are not from the ground, the bracha to be made is shehakol. The Tosfos clarifies. There's a little star in the Tosfos commentary we've written in. Mirba ravu me'aro kimeinu pitchers vade me'aro ravu. It's obvious, it's clear that the truffles and mushrooms grow forth physically from the ground. The shapir mikru gidule karka, they can be referred to as things that grow from the ground. Avol hayeniko shelahem, their nutrients, eino elo me'avir karka, comes from the air. V'lo mevorchin borei pri adama, you cannot recite the brocha, blessed be the Almighty who created the fruits of the earth with regard to command rituals. They don't derive their yanika, their sustenance, from the ground. So that as far as the sources are concerned, everything is fine. And if a person vows not to partake of Gidulei Karka? Well, that will include Kamein and Bitrios. If a person wants to know what bracha you make on them, you'll make a shackle because their nutrients do not derive from the ground, but rather through the air. And just on that last point, and as a result of their nutrients coming through the air, it would be inaccurate to describe them as borei pri ha'adamah. The Mishnah. Before we continue in the Mishnah, we have a brief topic heading, Hanodir mina ksus, one who vows not to benefit from ksus. The term ksus, as we see so many times, as we learn Nidorim, here's an issue of translation and connotation. So one who vows not to benefit from ksus will say, think about the word clothing. So he swears not to benefit from ksus. Mutar besak ubiyiria ubachamila. He is allowed to wear sackcloth, yiria and chamila. It's an amazing exercise in attempting to understand this. When you just glance at the Tosfos and the Rosh, Tosfos describes sack, yiria, chamila as einon begodim hein. They're not clothing. The Rosh under Sak Yiriel Chalil says Minei Begodim, types of clothing. As far as we're concerned, the Mishnah is declaring that one who swears not to benefit from Ksus, that term will not include these kinds of materials. Sak in general is a sackcloth which is made from the hairs of goats. We continue in the Mishnah. Oimer kainim tsemer ola olai. A person phrases his vow that he prohibits himself from having tsemer. Tsemer is wool. Tsemer shall not arise upon me. That's literal. As a result of that vow, nevertheless, mutter liskasis begize tsemer. He can cover himself with wool shearings. When he said tsemer ola olai, his intention is with regard to wool clothing, not wool shearings. Even though, when you translate it, you don't see that. That's why it's important for the Mishnah to communicate what is a person's intention when he says that. Pishton oil olai. A person, let us say, vows. Pishton is a reference to flax. Flax is the raw material from which linens are made. And he says, Pishton oil olai, mutter liskasois banitse pishton. He is allowed to cover himself with flax stalks, or anitze pishon, you see in the Gemara in Sukkah, and there it's defined as pishton, as the linen flax in an early stage of development. In other words, you're not. It's certainly pre-clothing stage. So if a person said Pishton Oilalai, he's allowed to cover himself with Anitze Pishton. Rav Yehuda Omer, Hakoil Lefi Hanoder. When a person vows Samar Oilalai or Pishton Oilalai, these expressions are subjective. It all depends on the circumstances. There'd be a brisa brought in the Gemara that elaborates on this even further, but the Mishnah says, Ta'an v'hizia v'yarechei kosher. A person, let us say, is carrying a burden of wool or of linen, of flax, and he's sweating away with a foul body odor emerging from him. Omar kainim semer pishim olalai, and he declares, while sweating away, he just says this vow that I'm not going to have Semer and Pishnim rise upon me. Mutul iskasos vasu lahaf shiel lachorov. A person like that is allowed to wear woolen and linen clothing. What he is prohibited in as a result of the vow is to carry them around as burdens. Literally, lahaf shilachov is to sling them over his back, but means to carry around wool and linen, linen plants. The wool shearings and unprocessed flax plants as a burden. Tanya, Hanoider Minaksus. Mutter Besak Bir Bechamila. Person who vowed not to benefit from Ksus, he is not prohibiting himself from Sak, Yiriyah, and Chamila. The Osir, Befunda, Ubepiskia, Ubeskurtia, Uvekatavlaya, Vampilia, Uplinia, Umichnosai, Vekova. Most of these words are quite unusual for many of us. The Mefarshim explain some of these words. In some cases, you'll see some old French used, some translations. So, for our purposes, though, the Gemara will be interested in what is skurtia. The term ksus, though, does include a number of other, say, clothing appurtenances. The punda is some type of hollow type of belt that people gird themselves with. Piskia, Rashi uses a French word. The scrutio word is something that the Gemara will try to understand. You'll find that the Rosh himself, when looking at this list, he simply says v'chol v'chein kol elu minei malbushim heim yesh shem shel or v'yesh shem shel beged. The Rosh doesn't delve into the translation of the things. Rather, he says they're all different types of clothing items. Some are made of leather. Some are made of fabric. The katavlaya happens to be a leather type garment, and as we said, there are other words here. The Gemara, though, is interested in knowing my iskurtia. What is the iskurti? Omar Rabo Bar Barchana Kituna Ditzola. It's a garment made of skin of leather, or is leather. Malbush shel or. Tosfos uses that term when explaining kituna detzola, pirush malbush or. The yotzin b'shabbos logim minav. Some people wear this as we would wear a raincoat. This leather outer garment protects people from the rain. Tanya, the Tanaic source features the laws of Shabbos, and in Shabbos there is a major area of law referring to transferring things from one domain to another, carrying from a private domain to a public domain, vice versa. Within that context, the source says Yoitzin b'sak ova uvesogus ova. If a person has covered himself with thick sackcloth or sogusava, type of sack that's thicker than yiriya, that's sogusava ubiriya ubachamila, but ne'ag shomim, all of these can be worn to protect one from the rain, so that it wouldn't, if a person covers himself with sackava, sogusava, yiriya, chamila, he's not, and walks from a private domain out into the street while it's raining, he will not be in violation of the Isur Hoitzah, because the Yisrael Sa does not cover, doesn't include the clothing one wears. One is allowed, obviously, to walk out from a private domain to public domain while clothed. So wearing these things or covering oneself with these things is within the realm of permissibility on Shabbos with regard to Hoitzah. Avon, however, even though a person wants to protect himself from the rain, lo b'teva, v'lo b'kupo, v'lo b'machzeles, one cannot walk out with a box inverted on his head, or a basket, or a mat over his head, simply to protect himself from the rain. Haroyim, royim are shepherds, yotzin besakim, the shepherds can go out on Shabbos, and they're with sack on them, and there's no problem of carrying, of transfer of location. The law, Royam Bilvad, Omru, the law doesn't concern or doesn't relate just to shepherds, Ella Kolod, anyone. Ella Shadibu Chacham Bahiva, the Chachamim's practice is to speak in common form. And it's common for shepherds to wear the sackcloth. The Rosh commentary, Yoitzim Besakim, he says, B'Shabbos, V'ein bo mishum masui, there was no violation of carrying burdens from one place to another. That's a very, very important addition that the Rosh is making, that since during the rain it's an acceptable form of clothing, even when it's not raining, it would be acceptable to go out with these types of coverings on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda Olamer Hakolufi Anoder V'Chulei Tanya Ketzem Rabbi Yehuda Hakolufi Anoder. What did Rabbi Yehuda mean that everything is in accordance with the vower? Haya Lavush Semer V'Heitzar. A person was wearing some woolen clothing items and he was very uncomfortable. Heitzar, he was experiencing discomfort. V'Yomar, and he declared Koinem Semer Olai, and he used that expression. Konam, an expression referring to a prohibition, a vow prohibiting semer, wool, from arising upon him. What is he intending? Also, lubosh umutu liton. His intention is to prohibit himself from wearing woolen clothing, but he's not precluding the possibility of his moving wool from one location to another. Liton means to carry around. Hoya ton pishton vizia. A person who was carrying linen or flax or wool shearings, the Rosh says that it could be included here as well. And he's sweating away. V'yomar kina pishton v'yolai. And he says this vow. The result is mutter lubo. She'll still be allowed to wear linen clothing, the usur liton, but he will not be allowed to carry around, to move, to work as a transporter, lugging around linen, flax, and wool shearings. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.